The Walking Dead Week in Review, Episode 43. Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Walking Dead Week in Review. I'm Jason. We have Jeff and Mike, Loves and Casey, all in the house tonight.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, everybody say hello. And I'm back.
Back from the dead.
Back from the dead. I'm like Carol. I die, I get buried, and I come back. So I will admit right off at the beginning that I was wrong.
Okay.
I was wrong about Carol. She didn't die.
Yeah, I didn't think she did either.
But weren't you guys also saying that Lori didn't die?
I didn't say that.
No, not me.
Saying we don't have a body.
A lot of people were.
I was saying we don't have a body yet.
Or some. I also heard some other ones where people were saying that Lori was actually rescued by Carol.
Well, that one we can probably scrub off the list.
I was saying that's all over the Facebook page, that theory.
It's all over everywhere. I mean, I've seen it in forums. I've seen it on Facebook. I saw it on Twitter. I mean, people were wholeheartedly holding out that Lori was alive. Don't forget, everybody hated Lori. Why do you want her to be alive now?
What I'm saying is that a walker will not eat a whole human being.
Yeah, and when it does, it passes out from all that tryptophan, because evidently humans like turkey.
Yes, we are. No, I mean, come on. Have we ever seen it? I mean, basically, this sets a really strange precedence that we've never, ever seen in zombie lore, which is one zombie not only ate one whole person and went into a food coma, but he ate them, bones and all.
Now, see, that's what I was saying before we started the show. We saw them put somebody in the ground. So now we have to assume it's Lori, because we know Carol is alive and Carl just admitted to shooting his mom in the head.
Right.
So we have to, I mean, either that or it's T-Dog's body, but
that's what I think.
T-Dog's body was definitely one of the bodies, but they made three. They dug three holes, and at the end, last episode, you saw Daryl put down the Cherokee Rose on one of the graves. So it led you completely to believe that was Carol.
I didn't believe it for a second.
No, in fact, it was even stated that not everybody was buried there. I mean, that they don't always bury people. Or I can't remember how it was put. But we saw one body get put in the ground. Now, let's understand that this precedence, of course, gets a little worse, because if we're supposed to sit here and believe that one walker ate all of Lori, then how come 20 walkers couldn't eat all of T-Dog if he's the one who's buried there?
I don't think that one walker ate her.
I think
that's the only one that just stuck around because he couldn't move.
Maybe Lori has tender meat.
And the other thing I have to say about the making assumptions part is, I mean, we know what assume means, right?
I make an ass out of you.
And yourself.
No, you.
But no, I mean, that nobody's ever, you know, we haven't heard anything saying that it was her put in there. I mean, I guess, quite frankly, at this point, it doesn't matter. I'm hoping that they're not going to go lame and she does, you know, all of a sudden pop up eventually other than in Rick's head. But the precedence that they set is a pretty good one that I think that the makers of the show need to clear up.
Yes. All right. Real quick, before we get any deeper into this, I want to let people know we want to hear from you. So please get a hold of us by calling us at 503-454-6941 to leave a message on our listener feedback hotline, so that, you know, it's more than just us talking the whole time. We want to hear from you guys. You can also email us at feedback@creepercast.com. And most importantly, leave a message, comment on our website at creepercast.com for the show notes for this episode. That way, not only will we see it, but so will the rest of the world. And that is the best way to, get your voice heard on the podcast.
And speaking of getting your voice heard, another place you can post all these things is on our Facebook, which is facebook.com/creepercast, where we would like to welcome Danielle to the cast.
Yes.
She joins us actually because she's been listening to the Walking Dead pod, the Walking Dead Week in Review. And we said we would talk about you and, make comments about what you had to say. So your comments were regarding the empty grave. You can have a grave and no body. For example, when someone was lost at sea, the family will still have a grave site for that person, regardless of having a body or not. I don't know if Carol is alive or dead, though. I hope not. Well, now you know.
She's alive.
She comes back like the Green Arrow.
But thank you for joining us, Danielle.
Yes, thank you so much. I also want to let you guys know to listen to us. We are now on Stitcher Smart Radio. So if you're downloading us through iTunes, you can continue to listen that way. But if you don't want to use up any room on your Android or iPhone, or iOS device, should I say, then simply go to Stitcher.com to download it, or right from your phone, go into the App Store, type in Stitcher, and then you can listen to The Walking Dead Week in Review streamed right to your phone. That's Stitcher Smart Radio. So, yes, I'm going over the Facebook or the iTunes page. And this one, one of the comments on there is by Bite Right, and he posted this last week, and you kind of touched on it because I was able to get it to you in time, but he actually said, please warn us if you're going to do spoilers about the comic. Some of us are waiting to read that, and it'd be great if you had a certain section of the cast that talked about it, then I could skip it, or just give us a warning. I did turn off your podcast after the second spoiler without warning. I was enjoying your cast, though. Thanks, Devin. I just listened to you guys for the first time. I do listen to others. So to Devin, I would say we don't intend on spoiling you guys. I mean, it's not our intention to go out there and say, well, this is what happened in the comic books. And because most of the comic books I still haven't actually read. I kind of have read up to probably where this season is going to end. So that's why I know what's going on right now. But as far as later on, I don't really know. I have kind of spoiled myself a few times because in doing research, I've been to the Walking Dead Wiki, which has kind of told me a few things ahead of where I am in the comic books. But I think this season, more than the last two, what's hard is trying to separate the comic book from the TV series, because the last two, they didn't overlap as much. This one, they're overlapping everywhere.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, that was like the hardest part for me, putting that show together. We had a lot of talk about it afterwards. And I originally, when I first got that, when you first told me about it during the recording of the last show, I originally just wanted to go, and we all pretty much agreed. It's like, we pretty much assume, we make an assumption, and as Mike has said, we've been making too many assumptions by what Mike said earlier about the episode. But, we make an assumption that you wouldn't be listening to us unless you've seen the show.
or read the comic book.
But I just want to say, in the same token, we did, Jason and I always intended to approach this as the show alone. If you listen to our first episode, we even said that we're going to try to treat it as a separate entity. This episode, or this last episode especially, and then this season and as a whole so far, it's been near impossible.
It really has. Right even down to, this episode with the phone. Unfortunately, I knew exactly what was going on with the phone as soon as it rang last season. Now, mind you, there are some differences on where the phone is located in the TV show versus the comic. But the crux of what the phone represents was still the same.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the problem we were having last time. And I'm too curious. So even though I stopped reading the comic books up till just as we get to the governor's Pleasantville, I asked a lot of things last time of, the two people that I knew have read more of the comics than I have. being KC and Mike. So I'm just going to say that for now on, I think we should definitely, if we know that we're going to lead into saying something about the comic book, we'll give fair warning.
Yeah.
Even though I've never read them, I want to know.
Well, and that's the other, like I say, you know, it's hard to do a podcast like this without mentioning, you know, some things in the comic book. And, you know, some of these points to me didn't seem like big spoilers, but maybe they were.
I don't really. Because like I was thinking is that it's not just because you think you know, this show has proven time and time again that we don't know that much.
Right, right.
So we're making assumptions, and then basically all you're doing is, as the show progresses, you're like, oh, this is the part. But it's nothing like what was in the comic book, you know, like to that extent.
Right.
So anyway, we should carry on and actually talk about the episode.
Yes, back to the episode. One last thing I want to let people know, because we did get some emails on this, that if you're wondering why we don't mention anything from The Talking Dead or anything that Kirkman puts out in Entertainment Weekly the day after explaining things, that's because we record this immediately after the episode airs. So right now it is 10:23 Eastern time. You figure out your own time. It's
even on yet. Yeah.
Yeah. So The Talking Dead isn't even on yet. This is Sunday. So we do it as soon as the show is over. It takes us, you know, a little bit to kind of get Skype and everything up and running. But, you know, we want to be as uninfluenced by outside information and just concentrate as much as we can on the episode itself. We will do all of the other stuff with the outside information when we go back during the break and look at the episodes again.
Which is coming up, unfortunately.
I know. I'm so sad.
I know, that sucks.
All right. Back to the episode, though. Tracking Michonne. Oh, this is right at the beginning. You know, we have Merle and his group of cronies tracking Michonne. And I love how she has the go back.
Yeah,
right there.
The bodygram.
Awesome.
And it reminds me of elementary school when my teacher would put stuff up on the board, like, you know, 7 letter C's with a sailboat on top of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Sailing the 7 C's and, you know, all of that type of stuff. So it was kind of inventive. I like how they did that as far as, you know, kind of having fun with the way that she's messaging people.
I think Michonne is a little bit crazy.
Just a touch.
Well, that's all right. She's going to fit right in with Rick then.
Yeah, especially right now, Rick. Yeah.
All right.
But he's finally coming to terms with things, but
it only takes a conversation with your dead wife.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was like I was saying last week, the governor wasn't just going to let her get away with putting that knife to his throat.
No.
I think you and I both said that. There was no way that they were just going to let her leave.
Yeah, exactly.
I wasn't willing to make predictions, but I agreed with all you guys when I was over and done with. And obviously this episode began with that, with proof. So...
Yes. Then we also have, during that same time, out of nowhere, Michonne drops down from a tree, very ninja style.
That's awesome.
Takes out 2 or 3 of Merle's men.
Two.
I couldn't tell if it was 2 or 3 of Merle's men, like they were nothing, before finally trying to run off and getting shot. Once again, all that skill, I'm really wondering where she picked up all that skill. Like, did the YMCA have, like, a course in ninja?
Basic instinct? Who knows?
Okay, spoiler, I guess. In the comic, some of the background is she was a fencer.
Okay. Well, that doesn't actually help you use a katana, though.
I understand that, but... so that's, you know... something, I guess, a little bit of combat training, but I mean the stuff that she's pulling off, that's a major.
She read a lot of books and watched a lot of samurai movies.
That could have been it.
We just don't know it yet. She'll tell us about it later.
maybe there is a samurai class at the
Y. She's gonna make the 13th samurai reference eventually.
She probably studied that movie Kill Bill a lot.
Yeah. Her and Uma were friends.
Training partners.
Yeah.
All right. And then let's go on to, we got the phone call where Rick hears a girl's voice. That's all we know at the beginning of the episode. And she claims to be at a safe place. Now, here's the thing. This can kind of be taken two ways now that at the end we know that it was Lori. But claiming
that... Actually, Lori at that time, because remember, Lori says that, didn't you recognize the voices you've been talking to, and I'm here with Amy and everybody who's dead.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah.
But you notice she didn't mention Shane.
That's because, but that's what I'm saying, was about to say, is they claim to be in the safe place, they won't tell where, and they're part of a group. And so, yes, you know, we can say that Rick has gone crazy and he's talking to her and it's all in his head. But the other way, if you want to take a more supernatural approach to it, could it be that all of them are in some sort of heaven?
No, Rick is just batshit crazy.
Humor me.
Good, go. You could.
Jesus.
I mean, they're all in a safe place, his own head. Now, I don't know how safe that is, but...
Not real safe right now.
Taking it that way, could it be that Rick is kind of starting to feel that the safest place for everybody is to be dead? The only way to get peace is to die?
I kind of got that feeling. I was thinking that, too, because when I realized it was... Amy and Jim and Jackie, all these people that have died, and they're saying, oh, this is a safe place. There's no walkers. There's no trouble. There's nothing, you know. I was wondering if maybe part of him was like, maybe we should just, you know, done with it. Yeah, opt out.
Yeah, you know, taking the non-supernatural approach, because nobody wants to...
refuses to go there.
Yeah. Nobody wants to humor me there. That's exactly it. You know, it's Rick thinking about opting out rather than staying and fighting. If we did go with the supernatural approach, you know, it's kind of like in the Poltergeist where they try to get Carrie Ann to come in and, you know, telling her it's warm and it's, you know, nice.
That's not what they were doing, though. That's not really what they were doing, though. They were trying to make him come to terms with the losses that he's been through so far. It was psychology. They were acting as a shrink for him. They weren't trying to get him to come to them. And the way it ended was Lori wasn't trying to get him to come to him. Lori was trying to get him to accept his responsibilities.
Right.
I agree. I just think that in that moment, maybe he was, that seemed like a good option.
I thought about that. Yeah.
No, so, until he spoke to Lori and she was telling him, you know, we have children that still need you. So, you know, you got to go back.
You got to go back.
Yes. Yes, it is. Stay away from the light, Rick Grimes.
Carrie Ann, come to me. So I don't know what to think about it, though. I mean, that's the thing. Obviously, at the end, I agree with what you guys are saying, you know, that it was his mental state trying to get him to kind of balance itself out, you know, self-heal himself. But at that point, maybe the reason that they were calling and claiming it's a safe place and all this stuff was because Rick at that point was contemplating opting out, and, you know, all he needed was an extra push or somebody to say, yes, it's a good idea. And that was his mind trying to tell him at that point, yes, it's a good idea, only later on to say, no, it's not.
Yeah. Yep, you're on the ball with that one. But it was God talking to him, and it wasn't the spirits trying to get him to go into the light.
It was nice to see all those voices again, Jim, Jackie, and Amy.
Yeah.
I recognized Jackie's voice right away.
See, after she said, didn't you recognize Amy? And I was like, oh, yeah, it was Amy.
See, I didn't recognize any of them until the very end when they described it. Let's see here. Michonne Hunting. I don't know why I wrote that down, but Michonne Hunted.
Because the kid that Merle couldn't remember his name.
Yes.
Was like, you know, basically talk about how they had to get out of there because, you know, like what she was doing running away or something like that. It's something to that effect. And Merle looked at her and looked at him and said, no, she's hunting like we are. So they were hunting each other.
So it's kind of like a sniper versus sniper.
Yes.
And she's better at it.
Definitely better. There's something about Merle, though, that by now, he should have been killed 3 days to Sunday and, you know, by five different people.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, yet, he always survives. And it's not because of skill, because really, he's not that skilled.
No, he's just...
It's like he's just lucky all the time.
Or he's such a despicable person that, you can't kill him.
I'm
sure he's constantly throwing people under the bus. I mean, look what he did with that guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I knew that was going to happen too. For all of his bluster, he's kind of a coward.
So. Then we got Andrea up on the wall with the girl in the hat.
Yep.
Who supposedly is claimed to be really good with a bow and arrow, yet somehow her arrows bounce off them. Did you notice that? Like somehow they're
bounced off. Yes, the first one bounced off his head.
It's like I'm looking at it. Like, did you blunt the tips? I mean,
the first one bounced off his head. The second two, she actually did miss because either the zombie, you know, the walker stumbled in a direction she wasn't expecting. Or at one point, it fell to his knees and went right over his head. But the first arrow bounced off the side of his head.
I was prepared to be impressed with her, like, ooh, the female Daryl. And then I was like, wow, she sucks.
Yeah. Well, especially after her saying, you know, we'll go down and I can teach you how to shoot and there's a training and I had to kill my dad to get this thing. And
Yeah.
That was a sweet looking... arrow thing she had. What was it? What kind of crossbow was that?
Oh, that was a compound bow.
Compound bow.
Yeah, that's a
pretty sweet looking.
That's a deer hunting bow.
And what's fun is because it's the first time I tried doing it. Is that, you know, that that side by side thing that they say you can do with the website, where it brings up trivia and such while you're watching the show.
Oh yeah.
And they actually, like, when she shot him, you know, shot the first time with the bow, all of a sudden the website changed, and you basically got all the stats for that particular bow.
That's interesting. I like that.
They did the same thing with Carol's knife when they found it, which I thought was funny because it's a barely legal pocket knife.
Barely legal?
Yeah, because it's a...
It's like just over 3-inch blade?
It's a 3.5.
3.5-inch, okay.
Yeah, it's a 3.5-inch stiletto.
Hey, right. I didn't know that. I thought it was a lock blade. So,
which I thought was interesting. I was like, oh. So what tells me, though, is that she's probably was carrying this knife long before the apocalypse happened.
Well, she could have gotten it from somebody.
With an intent to probably use it on her husband someday.
Actually, that's a really good, really good theory. I didn't even think about that.
Meanwhile,
back in the woods. No, after that, though, you know, Andrea jumps down and, you know, right, takes the walker on herself. You could see the thrill in her eyes. Like, she hadn't killed something in a while, and she needed it. She was like Dexter needing to kill.
Oh, yeah.
You know what it reminded me of? That scene where she shot Daryl by mistake?
Yeah.
How she was so excited to actually shoot something, and then...
Oh, yeah, like,
and then she realized her mistake.
Yes.
She really... I don't know what to say about that. It's just that she really is, I guess... Do you think she might, like, go into the fighting pits?
I think she might actually volunteer for it.
Well, and that was actually the point where I was going. I believe it was you, Mike, last week said... the first thought was that it was going to be Andrea versus Michonne, or no, it was Loves actually asked, do you think it'll be Andrea versus Michonne? At this point, I'm beginning to wonder.
Well, you know, I'm not giving away a spoiler when I say that they have gladiators.
Right.
That are basically in the town that are professional fighters. Mm-hmm. That's their main job. And I'm wondering if, you know, when he says he has another job for her or something like that, you know, she's not on the wall anymore. Wonder if that's what her new job's going to be, training to be a fighter.
Huh. Or something that'll relate to that.
Yeah. You know, basically taking that instinct of wanting to hurt and kill and maim things. The only thing with Andrea, though, is I've never seen her actually want to hurt a human. It's always been a walker.
True. Huh. I guess we shall see.
It seems kind of weird to me that they're fighting other people instead of, it seems like they would be fighting walkers instead of each other. Like,
well, it kind of comes down to the old gladiator thing that, you know, walkers don't fight back as much as others, so there really isn't going to be a lot of sport in it.
Right. And the gladiators, you know, used to fight each other, but with live animals like tigers or lions. If you watch,
oh, that's true.
Gladiator.
Yeah, it's a very thing to do is to have the creatures that you most dread around you the whole time. They
you know,
get it.
It spices things up, you know, because not only are you fighting to, you know,
your opponent,
other guy, your opponent. Yeah, thank you. You also have these dangers, you know, inherent in the pit itself.
Yeah, and it's been, and that same story's been told, you know, not just with gladiators, but through a lot of sci-fi TV shows and movies. You see it,
Flash Gordon,
Star Trek. One of them did that with the Klingons. You know, I mean, there's been a ton of them.
Oh, that's great! Now I got Flash Gordon's theme song going in my mind.
Now I have to find the Flash Gordon theme song.
You'll save every one of us. Down, 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 down.
You're welcome.
Meanwhile, back
to Rick Roll. You have now been Flash Gordon.
Yeah. No more Rick Rolling. It's all Flash Gordoning now. We're starting.
Meanwhile, back in the woods.
You hear to hear first, everybody. We just started the Flash Gordon. You're not Rick Rolling anymore.
Yeah, Rick Rolling.
You're Flash Gordon.
So, Michonne learned something that,
Here we go.
Diagrams.
That's Savior of the Universe.
That's awesome.
And now it will take me 2 weeks to get that damn song out of my head.
Thank you, Queen, for writing two of the greatest sci-fi films
kidding.
Theme songs. Flash Gordon and Highlander, constantly. I am, of course, talking about.
Anyway.
Meanwhile, back in the woods.
Why do you keep saying back in the woods?
Are we in the woods?
Well, I have something to say about that.
Okay. About Flash Gordon?
No. Michonne learned something that, you know, Ricky and Glenn learned in the second episode about if you cover yourself with walker guts, they don't detect you.
Yes, that was actually the next part that I was going to touch on is her being able to, after slicing one of the walker's stomachs and, you know, it spilled out on her. All I wrote is guts equals guts.
I'm glad I wasn't eating anything at the time.
No, that was really graphic.
It was great to look at her face too. Do you think she was acting then?
No.
What I was curious about it though is, I mean, she walked around for months with her pets, which obviously helped as a deterrent for keeping the walkers away. How did she not realize the stench of other zombies or zombie guts would protect her?
I don't know if that's so much the case or the fact that she's never had zombie guts spill down on her.
She just assumed it was the zombies she had with her.
Yeah, because they were up and walking and stenching and rotting on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. So, stench-wise,
Well, and she was even using them kind of as guards, like when she left Andrea in the cooler, in the freezer, you know, when she walked up in the first episode, the first time we see her, at least. And when she walks up, she has her zombies, her pets, hanging out outside, and you could tell that that was to be a deterrent.
Yes. Agreed. So, how about Andrea and the governor?
Oh.
That is just wrong.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, I saw...
It was kind of like a sexy shot, though. You know?
Do it. Do it.
Which one? When they were kissing or when they were in bed?
When they were in bed. Like, the angle and everything, it was like sexy.
All I know is he's tons paler than she is.
Yeah, he needs to spend some time outside. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, my God. She didn't waste any time.
He's really the first guy that she's been with for, 9 months, so.
He did ask her.
And the last one was...
Isn't that tactful, though? I mean, the way he asked her and pretty much led up to that.
How long
was, like, he gives her whiskey... And it's like, how long have you had any whiskey as good as that? Really? That worked?
So when was your last Shane? I mean.
I mean, how's the whiskey?
Yes. I mean, Brandy. Wait. Do you know a Brandy?
What was her name? Wait. All right, I actually have a question about Andrea because I'm wondering if anybody else here feels the same. And I'm pretty sure Mike does. But I've been hearing a lot of things. You know, usually when I do a poll about people, everybody, of course, wanted Lori to be dead. Now, is anybody else hearing that Andrea needs to be next?
No,
I don't think Andrea needs to die.
I want the bitch dead now.
No, not at all. I like Andrea. I everything she's doing with the governor, I still like Andrea.
Yeah. I see that a lot now that Lori's dead. Everybody switched their hate to Andrea. Well,
no, you can't get rid of. First of all, there's only like three main females on the show, and one of them is Maggie. So of course she's my number one. Andrea's my number two. You can't get rid of my number two. You have to start from the bottom up, not the top down.
But you can't get rid of Michonne already because she just started.
Well, there's still a couple greens left.
Well, likes that she seems to be taken in by the governor. I keep trying to tell. Well, I've been defending Andrea, so.
Still think she has her own motives.
Yeah, that could.
I don't think she's that smart, honestly.
Oh, really?
Oh, I think she's very smart, and I think
she's a lawyer. She has to be smart, right?
I think Andrea
smart. She could be book smart. I just think she's buying into this thing way. You know, I think she's in it. You know, jumping in feet first. She's happy. She's safe, and you know, she admits she likes the fighting. You know, even though she tried to act all indignant about it,
Well, you're not that far-fetched, Mike, I don't think, because we do have to remember this is a girl that was very taken in by Shane.
That's
Shane
a twist. She goes for the bad boys wholeheartedly. I mean, so the fact that she went for the governor isn't really much of a stretch, considering that her last boyfriend, if you want to call it, her last screw, was Shane.
You think she's gullible?
Hmm. She likes powerful men, strong men. I don't think she likes... Oops, sorry. What? I'm sorry. Was I speaking over you?
You're okay. You know, that's why I backed off, is I just wanted to finish my sentence.
Go ahead. Just go on.
No, all I was saying was that I think she plays them just as much as they play her. And what you were saying actually lends credence to that. About liking
for men. Power trip, the powerful.
Well, you know, like we said earlier, she was she a lawyer or did she just work in a law firm? God, why do I always forget?
She was a lawyer.
Dale said she was a
paralegal.
She was an environmental attorney.
Okay.
No, it was for, now I can't remember.
I thought it was environmental or something like that.
Oh, this is going to bug me, and I guarantee I'm going to look it up afterwards and feel dumb. So anybody out there, call in and make me feel dumb. Call us 503-454-6941 or leave us a comment at the bottom of this page on thecreepercast.com. All right, but back to what I was saying, though, being that, you know, she worked in law, she was always around very, I guess, alpha males, you know, people that are constantly competing with each other to be top dog. And I think that being in that environment, she got she found an attractiveness to that.
Mm-hmm. She's crazy.
She's a lawyer. She's crazy.
Well, she will see when it, now that she's slept with him, and I guess she's kind of there's something there between them. When she finds out who he is, it's just gonna like raise the stakes.
Especially yeah. Now that Maggie and Glenn are in there.
And this is where you actually get the interesting, you know, duality of what's going on with Andrea is in answer to your question that I still hope people call in and tell us is she was a civil rights attorney.
That's it.
Oh, let her
I'm looking
die.
At their Wikipedia page. Yes, I just found it as you said that.
Okay, she can die now.
Which is quite a duality when you think about it because she's quite the opposite right now.
No, actually, that's a really good observation. The fact that, you know, and you know what? Even last season when Dale was trying to convince her about killing, what's his name? And they were having that big argument, you know, where Dale was running around trying to get everybody to vote against it. And right. He was talking to her and he even mentioned, you know, that you are a civil rights attorney. You know, this isn't right. And now all of a sudden, it's like she's not seeing, you know, the human rights the way that she did a couple months ago or months before. That everything in her just completely flip-flopped, and now it's all about my personal gain, not the good of the people.
Well, she cares about the good of certain, you know, the good of people, but her own welfare comes first, I think. Which is something we've discussed many times about when it comes to dealing with the zombie apocalypse is that you have to put yourself first.
Yes.
So she's learned how to do that. And not only has she learned how to do that, she's learned how to do, you know, to take walkers out one headshot at a time.
And to do governors.
And to do governors. And who wouldn't do the governor? Come on.
Now, one thing that's different, I will say, and this is not a spoiler, between the TV show and the comic book. In the comic book, people are screwing each other left and right.
This is very true. Yeah. You can't go a single collection of the comics without somebody having sex.
Or screwing another person over by, you know, having sex or giving a blowjob to their significant other.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Okay.
Let's get into the two people that that everybody loves, which is Glenn and Maggie.
Aww.
The show's heartthrobs.
Heartthrobs.
Yes.
They're the little sweethearts of the group.
There we go. That's what that's a better word. The sweethearts. The show's sweethearts. So they head out and they end up getting caught by Merle. But you realize what they were doing when they got caught.
Making out? Oh, I mean, yes. Yes, they were breaking into a drugstore and stealing formula for the baby.
They were stealing toys.
Oh, yeah. Well, she told him to get toys.
Right.
But remember when Merle carjacked him and made him drive away, what we saw was a cart full of baby formula.
But, you know, my theory of them becoming the surrogate parents of...
Yeah.
Of
I think
little,
that's out the window now.
Yeah, I think... I agree with you, Casey. I
think all surrogate parents at this point. Daryl's proven himself, and now Rick's finally stepped up, so...
So, I still think, come the end, Glenn and Maggie are going to end up as the surrogate parents. They're the ones that are right now trying to, they're the ones going out and trying to get the formula, trying to get everything. Maggie was the first one to hold the baby. I mean, all of this speaks to the fact that, you know, they are going to want to end up, or they're going to end up with the child, taking care of the child.
So I have a question. Spoiler, spoiler, spoiler. Before I say this question, it's spoiler. Is Rick going to die at some point in the comic book?
No.
Not so far.
Okay. So,
yeah.
And it's not really a spoiler either.
Okay. No, and as Kirkman put it, it could happen.
Okay, so if Rick dies, then there's a possibility of them taking over. But right now, I agree. I think
the baby's everybody's baby right now.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and the
thing that I want to, you know, we always know that that's what Glenn does, is he makes runs. What I think that we should actually take out of the scene of Glenn and Maggie making a run is, notice Maggie's finally accepted that her job is to make runs with Glenn.
Cute.
Well, yeah, because she was all, you know,
she was all against first.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you're my man now and I don't want you in danger. And, you know, I'm sure that wasn't the exact words, but, you know, that's what the feeling was. And now she has not only accepted that's what he does and what he's good at. Now she's come around to the point where she's accepted it and she's going to help him.
Yeah.
Now she's, and they get their little alone time where they can.
Exactly. You got to get it when you can.
Even if it's in a guard tower when everybody else knows what's going on.
Yes.
I didn't ask you guys last week, but did you notice Daryl picked up a little baby doll for
the
baby?
Yeah, when they were walking around and they were like cleaning out the place. Yeah, I do remember that.
I forgot.
Yeah, he picked up a baby doll and was carrying it in front of his bow.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
And then he shoved it in his belt at one point.
That's cute.
All right. And then that's really the last I have, that, you know, they were kidnapped by Merle, and Merle took him and is now going to be holding him hostage. This is one of them, though, that it's kind of amazing how the governor just kind of goes and backs up Merle's being, you know, okay with them torturing them guys. Because, you know, they didn't do anything bad. They didn't do anything wrong. Basically, he says, they know where my brother is. I'm going to get it out of them.
Yeah, but you're talking about the same guy who just shot those, you know, National Guard dudes for no freaking reason.
No, this is a king at work. Like I've said before, this is a king at work. Is that sometimes you have to let your head in command go nuts?
Well, but he lets him go nuts on them. But when it came to Andrea and Michonne, they got amnesty for the most part.
Because they saw an opportunity with Andrea and. That one panned out, and Michonne, he figured he could deal with later. I mean, it makes pretty much sense. He's made a game out of Michonne. He's kind of made a game out of Andrea. Plus, he's still trying to find, you know, a stepmother for his zombie baby.
Of course.
And whereas these two people, and it's also a case of, if you don't see, if you don't know, if you don't understand, then just let the other people do it. He doesn't have to get his hands dirty on this one. Especially since they know Andrea, he doesn't. It's one of those cases where he doesn't want to get his hands dirty. The less he knows, the better.
Yeah,
that's true. Because he even asked him if Andrea knows them.
Yeah.
Right, and the thing that you got to realize too is with with Andrea and Michonne, they were found ill and wandering, and it was clear that they, you know, had been out in the wilderness or whatever. Whereas when Daryl brings back Glenn and Maggie, and I don't know if it was actually stated specifically, but Merle realizes that they're well fed. They've got a base camp somewhere. And just like with the governor taking the military trucks from those military guys, if there's another safe place or a place that can be raided for supplies, you know damn well he's going to take it. So, yeah, let Merle go nuts on him.
Oh, yeah, okay. I get that.
It's the shortest. It's the shortest point to what you want to, you know, to what you want. And that's the shortest point for him, is to let Merle do his thing. So that's what's going to happen. And I guess, you know, now we have to wonder who's going to be in the pit with Andrea.
I can tell you right now, though, if they hurt my Maggie, I will jump through this screen.
I'm actually
and
afraid,
rip off an appendage.
You know, semi-spoiler alert. I'm afraid that
Maggie is going to become Michonne.
Yeah, and what happens to Michonne?
Yeah,
yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And that's why I'm going to rip off an appendage.
Because Glenn is kind of like in the same position he was in the comic.
Yeah, because I can see them doing, you know, letting him go to send a warning to Rick or whatever. But since we've swapped characters, like I said, I'm worried that they're going to do to her what they did to Michonne in the comics.
Uh-oh.
I don't want that to happen. That would be bad. You don't hurt my Maggie.
Now, the only thing I had a problem with is I understand Michonne was wounded there towards the end. She'd been shot or whatever. And she's obviously, clearly, you know, and with good reason, leery about approaching strange people. But then when she sees Merle show up, don't you think she could have, you know, especially when he was on the ground with his back to her, she could have just gone up and taken him out right there. But instead she just...
Well, I think a part of that is because she didn't know them. And therefore she didn't care, you know, what happened to them. She just wanted to save her own butt.
Right, and I get that to an extent, but there's also that whole thing of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. You know, obviously when he draws down on them, and she could see that Glenn has a problem with Merle right from the start, you know, she could have, you know, done something, but instead she hangs back, and then miraculously somehow she finds the prison. And if she's just looking out for herself, why did she carry the goods, the baby formula and everything, all the way back to the prison?
That's a good question.
Because how else do they think they're going to, you know, how else is she going to get in?
Because she just walked up there.
I mean, it could be all, you know, self-preservation. And she knew what was going to work.
She was once thinking. She got,
so, and maybe she just didn't feel confident enough to make the, you know, to jump in on that one. Because Merle did almost best her once.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. So at that point, she was probably skittish.
But everybody earlier was talking about how awesome she was. I mean, let's keep in mind that Merle really did kick her ass.
Yeah.
So, I mean, she should be a little skittish about jumping in on that one. And maybe she originally thought that they had control over the situation. When they got caught, she was probably just like, well, I'm not in a position where I can attack, where I can jump in on this. And I don't know these people, so I'm going to let them hold their own. And, you know, I mean, it's something a lot. These are decisions that everybody's, you know, would have to go through in a zombie, you know, an apocalyptic situation.
Yeah. So, all right. Any last things you guys want to say? I'm out.
All right. I have a question. There's a question that's posted from The Talking Dead saying, if someone says they are receiving phone calls during the zombie apocalypse, how should you react?
They're crazy.
Yeah.
Herschel was
the
like...
The same way Herschel did.
I know. I would have said, what the heck are you talking about?
Oh, you're getting phone calls.
That's interesting. Tell me about your mother.
Yeah. Why don't you lie down?
Dude, lie down over on this couch over here. Yes, yes. Just like that.
I don't think we talked about... oh, my goodness. Daryl and his group. And him sharing his story about his mother with Carl.
Oh, yeah. When Carl said, you know, basically his comeback to Daryl when he was talking about his mom and the Virginia Slims and everything. And Carl, creepy Carl, says, I killed my mom.
Yeah. Well, Daryl was trying to make him feel better.
It was a little creepy for me, I guess.
You know, Carl just like flat out, I shot my mom. I ended it.
But the reason why he said that though was because Daryl was trying to make him sound like it was all, you know, Daryl was doing a good job at trying to be the understanding guy that says, you know what, this shit happens, you just learn how to deal with it, by making it sound like it was your mom's, you know, it was his mom's own fault. The house burned down. She was nowhere to be seen ever again. But Carl, you know, instead of, didn't feel better by that, because that's why Carl's response was, yeah, but I did this.
Yeah, I had to shoot.
You know. So I understand. Really, I understand how that, you know, why that one worked out the way it did. I liked the insight we had to Daryl. I liked the insight we had to Carl.
Yeah.
At that point. I mean, I thought it was really good. a good way of looking at it. I think we're also going to have a breakdown from Carl at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Well, because the thing is Carl's already kind of getting to that numbing phase where he's kind of acting numb to everything that's around him, you know, that he's kind of on right. autopilot.
But that's what Rick did for the last, you know, six episodes, and we saw him break, so Carl's going to have a break at some point.
Yeah, okay. And then with that, also, we have the walker that basically blocked them from finding Carol right away.
Yes.
And so
it's funny that they actually found Carol in the way that they always hoped that they would find Sophia.
Yes.
So I found that interesting. And then we always make this point to bring out the idea of the, you know, the simple things in life, the way life was before. So let's not forget, his name's Oscar, right?
Yes.
Yeah, let's not forget Oscar coming across the slippers.
Yeah.
And with that...
That was funny.
Speaking of the simple things, I need to bring up a little Taps. I want to have a moment of silence.
Are we mourning again?
For the Twinkie.
That won't be there for Tallahassee.
That's twice in 1 week, man. We're having a bum week.
I actually preferred the cupcakes, but they're gone too.
Yeah, see, I'm a big fan of the ding dong, so I mean, yeah. I didn't like Twinkies.
I love Twinkies. Twinkies, ding dongs. What else? Wonder Bread.
Wonder Bread, yes.
Which I can do without Wonder Zingers. Bread. Zingers. Oh yeah, no more Zingers.
I'm a fan of the raspberry Zingers.
You know, the worst part is basically they took away my complete sustenance while I'm out hunting.
Yes, they did.
Because that's all I take out with me to survive on the entire day while I'm sitting in the woods is Hostess foods.
And I'm sure that they planned this like right from the beginning. No, let's just really quickly point out the fact, because these are fun things that I've been seeing pointed out, that... Hostess decided to shut down for good in the same year that six states legalized marijuana.
And they also shut down 4 weeks before the end of the world. The one food that can actually survive a nuclear attack shut down before the end of the world. I think
well
the
played,
Mayans.
Ryan. Well played.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, yes. The apocalypse is here, folks.
I'm sorry I have to say this. I'm like looking at my Facebook and one of my friends in Florida put, "We are thankful for years of Hostess. We decided to hold a candlelight vigil." I'm like, they have these like a candle with the Hostess snacks.
You know, the thing is it's one of them that I don't go out and buy them that often, but now that I won't be able to. And I also saw, and I saw the link for Micah on eBay that somebody is trying to sell a box of
a single box of Twinkies for $10,000.
$1,000 a Twinkie. Now, mind you, this is a buy it now price. He didn't put it up for auction. I'm not sure he'll get that yet.
So he's gonna stab out there in hopes that he's gonna, you know, somebody's gonna go for it.
Although what we need to do is you need to go out and I think you mentioned this, Jeff, on the Creepercast. We need to go out and scour the country to find as much Hostess Twinkies and Hostess foods and hold on to them because they're good for like 12 years, I think.
Yes.
And in 10 years. Put them up for auction because that's when they'll really be valuable.
Breaking news. My lovely wife just informed me she just found one on eBay for $200,000.
All right. I think with that, it's time to go. What do you guys say?
Insane.
I say it's just really sad that we're not going to have Hostess cupcakes to make cheap little birthday cakes out of anymore.
Oh, yeah.
And with that...
And you know what? It kind of makes that whole scene from Ghostbusters where they talk about a giant Twinkie?
Yeah,
that's a big Twinkie.
That's a big Twinkie. All right, that was The Walking Dead Week in Review and our mourn to the Twinkie. To get a hold of us, give us a call, 503-454-6941. We want to hear from you, so leave us a message. You can email us at feedback@creepercast.com. You can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/creepercast. And definitely leave a comment on the website for this episode at creepercast.com. All right. Next week, see you guys. See you, Jeff. Loves, Casey, Mike.
See ya.
See you next time.